day, and welcome to the Barratt Trading Update conference call. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. David Thomas, CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. As usual, I have Jessica here with me. Today, as you know, we're announcing our trading update for the period from the 1st of January to the 6th of May. Overall, we've continued to see a strong performance, both operationally and financially. Trading since the beginning of the year has been strong across the business, driven by good consumer demand and an attractive lending environment. If we initially look at our operating performance, clearly we remain fully committed to building the highest quality homes and providing excellent customer service. This is evidenced by us having won more NHBC Pride in the Job awards than any other house builder for the 13th consecutive year. And in January, we again won the Supreme National Award for Large House Builders, our second win of the National Award in 3 years. Also, I'm pleased to say that in March, we were awarded HBF five-star status for the 9th consecutive year, the only major house builder with this record. Now moving into the numbers. Our sales rate was in line with a strong prior year at 0.8 net private reservations per active outlet. We launched 33 developments in the period, and we operated from an average of 388 outlets over the period. We've also been able to continue to build our forward sales position, with total forward sales, including joint ventures, at record levels, up 2.5% at 3.3 billion. On net cash, we are increasing our guidance to expect net cash of around 550 million at June 18. Turning to land, the market remains very attractive, and we expect to approve the purchase of more than 20,000 plots in the full year versus around 18,500 in FY17. We continue to secure attractive deferred payment terms on land, and in line with prior guidance, we expect land creditors to be between 30 and 35% of the owned land bank at the end of June. Finally, on outlook, group trading is clearly strong, and it remains in line with the board's expectations. We remain committed to investing in more efficient ways to design and build homes, whilst remaining focused on our build quality and customer service. We are undertaking a number of initiatives to improve operating margin in the medium term. These include our new house types, increased standardisation, and increased participation of completions from strategic land. We're pleased to say that we are on track in implementing these initiatives across the business. Jessica and I will now be happy to take your questions.
Thank you, sir. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We will now take our first question from Aynsley Lammin from Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. Just two from me, please. Wondered if you comment on any regional kind of differences, particularly maybe singling out London and the trends you're seeing there. And then secondly, just on, I don't know, whether you kind of got any more information in terms of the scale of the margin improvements you might see from the new kind of housing ranges as you start to build those out. That will be quite helpful and interesting. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. I will try to answer both of those. So just in terms of trends, I mean, I would say that trends are very consistent with what we've seen as we've reported through January and February. We've commented fairly extensively regarding London, and we provided a lot of information at the February update. You know, there's no real change to the London position from that point in time. We've been clear that we are no longer buying land in Zone 1 and the inner edge of Zone 2, and we're very focused on Zones 3 to 6, and we've been securing some really great land opportunities in 3 to 6 over the last 12 to 18 months. So beyond that, I think very consistent trends and clearly overall strong consumer demand. I think the rate of sale at 0.8 year on year is a great rate of sale. So that's good. In terms of margin, so we've outlined in February that we are seeing margin improvements coming through from the regional business, and that margin improvement is being slightly dragged by margin impact coming from our central London business. So again, no change to that trend, but we are still confident that our central London business, certainly coming through our own profit and loss as opposed to joint ventures, that we will be clear of that during calendar 19, and therefore we will no longer have that drag effect, and we'll just see the benefits coming through in terms of margin. We've given quantification on various parts of the margin improvement, and we've also outlined when that improvement should be fully effective. So, for example, we've said historically that margin improvement of around £3,000 per Barrett house, around £1,000 per David Wilson house. We've said that the five-year warranty is giving us a benefit of around £10 to £12 million. And the removal of show homes, again, a benefit of around £12 to £14 million. So I think that we've spelled that out fairly clearly, and that will clearly come through the business FY19, FY20, and beyond. So we have a high level of confidence about delivering these margin improvements.
We will now take our next question from Andy Murphy from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Morning, David. Morning, Jessica. A couple of questions, both of which relate to potential impacts on the margin, either for you or the wider industry. First of all, more specifically for Barrett, I was wondering whether the increase in the forward order book in terms of the volumes of what seem to be lower-priced houses is likely to have any downward impact on the group margin in the short to medium term. And secondly, we're reading in the papers quite a lot, it's more of an industry thing, I think, rather than a Barrett thing, about the potential impact of perhaps having to slow build rates to address quality issues. Is it fair to say that from your point of view, you would argue that doesn't apply to Barrett, but I was wondering what your views were perhaps on a sort of wider market issue, whether you think that might have an impact, or would it slow build rates or put pressure on labour perhaps?
Okay, so if I try to cover those. I mean, it first of all, in terms of mix and pricing, I think the headline is that there should be no impact on margin. I mean, the underlying position on margin for us is that we are buying all our land above our hurdle rates, our published hurdle rates of a 20% gross margin and 25% return on capital. All our land intake is above those hurdles. And we've been able to do that because we have launched a new house type range. We're very focused in terms of the efficiency of our business. I think when you look at sort of general trends for the business on ASP, we've outlined two general trend points. First of all, as you move through FY19 into 20 and 21, we will not have Zone 1 sales coming through our P&L. And therefore, they tend to be at high average selling prices. Secondly, we are largely moving away from known standard developments in the regional business. We've undertaken maybe 10 or 15% of our production historically has been what you would describe as non-standard or bespoke developments. So we feel that whilst those tend to have higher average selling prices, they've tended to have lower margins and therefore very difficult for the market to disaggregate that, and therefore we want to really stick to standard house types and achieve higher margins. So I think that should all be positive for margin rather than negative. In terms of, you know, the affordable housing participation within the mix, you know, we expect that to stay in a sort of 18 to 20% band, and again, should have no impact in terms of margin. So I think that that's covering the first point. And sorry, Andy, can you just remind me on the second point?
Yeah, we've read in the papers for quite some time now issues around build quality and whether the industry has been trying to, you know, comply with the government's wishes to get the volumes up, and in order to do that, cutting corners basically and ending up with sort of remedial issues and arguably some reputational risk. The question really was, you know, does any of that apply to Barratt? I suspect not, but whether you had any comments on a wider industry nature and what that might how that might reflect on the industry overall, whether that's, if you're going to have to spend more time on each individual house as an industry, whether that's how much pressure that would put on the margins overall, from a labour point of view.
Yeah, but thanks, Andy. Thanks for just further outlining that. I mean, I think if I could just talk about Barratt and just briefly comment in terms of the industry. First of all, to get in under the subject of quality and service, it's not necessarily easy to summarise, but I think there are key performance indicators for the industry which are used as a proxy for quality and service. So the customer recommend scores coming from the survey are very good proxies, in my view, for customer service. It is one of the largest consumer surveys that is undertaken in the UK. Every new homeowner receives a questionnaire, and the response rate for the industry is round about 60%. The survey results are published, and they've been published over a period of around, 13 or 14 years. So this is a pretty good indicator of quality and service. You can see where all of the major house builders sit on that index, and we believe that our performance is second to none. We are a long way ahead of our peers in terms of customer service. The second area is quality, and again, there is our proxy, not perfect, but a reasonable indicator in terms of the NHBC Pride in the Job Awards. So 16,000 sites are included within the NHBC Pride in the Job Awards, covering small, medium, and large house builders. It is clear that some of the house builders are a long way ahead of the industry averages and a long way ahead of the peers. We are very pleased to have won more Pride in the Job Awards than any other house builder for the last 13 years. But we do recognise that we are the largest house builder. Nonetheless, our performance is very, very strong. So we are focused on this day to day, week to week. I review, in conjunction with Stephen and our management team, the performance stats every week. And we think it's got to be a day to day, week to week focus. You can't suddenly become good at quality and service. I think when you look at the wider industry, I think the good news is that the industry has produced more volume in calendar 17 compared to calendar 16. So quite a big step up in terms of the delivery for England, stepping up from about, I think around about 190,000 up to about 217. And the industry has improved its customer service for the first time in around 7 years. The customer service stats stepped up substantially. So up by around 200 basis points, which I think is a big improvement for the whole industry. So that has to be positive. There is no doubt that some of the reputational questions around the industry that took place in 2017, I think have spurred many of the house builders on to really address quality and service, and that clearly has to be a good thing. So that hasn't resulted in really a slowing of volume, because I think the growth stat for the industry was pretty good in 17, but I think it's simply about putting better controls and more resource. I mean, building quality costs money. There is no question about that. But if you want to protect your reputation, you've got to invest money in doing so.
Okay. Thanks for your time. Cheers.
Thanks, Andy.
We will now take our next question from Will Jones from Redburn. Please go ahead.
Morning. Two from me, if I could, please. The first, just digging into the order book, I know that the private element of that in value terms is pretty flat, but within that picture, I think ASP's down around 6 compared to last year, volume's up around 7. Presumably, on the ASP side, that's just the London mix effect taking shape. And then on volumes, I guess, to what extent have you seen a benefit on that position, at least from any delays to production around the weather issues in March? And I guess linked to that, can you just confirm that you're still guiding to modest completion growth for FY18, given those, you know, potential disruptions around weather? And then the second area is really around sites, which I think have ticked up about 1% in the second half against last year. I think back at the half year, you were talking about potentially a 2% lift in FY19 and a range of 3 to 5 thereafter. Perhaps you can just update us on your kind of confidence on that medium-term site picture, and in particular, how much land you might need beyond this year if you are to start increasing sites by 3 to 5 more medium-term. Thanks.
Okay, Will, hi, good morning. So Jessica will cover the question regarding sites, and I'll just pitch in on the order book and also the weather. So just, on the order book, I think really just following on from the points I talked through with Andy, I think that the ASP movement is best described as two things. One, Central London, as you highlight, and secondly, less bespoke developments, i.e. probably higher ASP developments in the regional business. We're therefore seeing a sort of reduction in ASP, but there's good volume increases in terms of private, and that will obviously partly be for delivery in May and June, and partly be for delivery as we move into FY19. In terms of weather, we avoided reference to it in the announcement. I think everyone knows that the weather in March was challenging, but equally we recognise that our production programme is based outdoors and we need to be able to flex and cope with changes in the weather. It was too cold to lay bricks in March, and now it's too hot for the bricklayers to come to work. So, you have to deal with the weather one way or another. So we think that the impact is something that we are just dealing with and isn't going to have any major impact on completions. But we are definitely guiding to modest completions. I mean, that's a terminology that we've used throughout the year. And I think we've sort of said kind of 1% to 2% in terms of growth. But in all honesty, our focus is not simply about growing volumes. Our focus is also about quality and service, and our focus is also about margin.
Great.
Good morning, Will. Just picking up on the sites question. As you said, the site numbers are up to 388 in the second half versus 384 in the prior year. Which is very much in line with what David's just said around our modest volume growth. So modest growth in site numbers, clearly the sales rate is still in line, that leads to modest growth in terms of completions for this financial year. Looking at the land, as you can see, we continue to expect to approve more than 20,000 plots of land this year. And that supports our volume growth ambitions. we definitely see that 20,000 units is achievable in the medium term, and still continue to look to grow by 3 to 5% per annum after this year.
Great. And would you say that to get up to that run rate of 3 to 5 of growth, do you need to be moving ahead again on the plot intake in FY19 versus the 20 plus of this year, or is it too early to say?
I think it really depends in terms of the strength of the land market. I definitely think we would need to be taking more plots than we would expect to need, so probably slightly more than 20,000, but clearly we'll assess the strength of the land market and the opportunities available to us at that point in time.
Great. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Gregor Kuklich from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Can I push in a few points? So on the whole margin discussion, I think I can kind of summarize it this year, regional up, London down, so net-net not much in terms of what we're going to see on the P&L. Can you give us some confidence that you actually expect headline margins to step up in a reasonably meaningful way in FY19, first question. Second question is just, you're obviously flagging some mixed points on ASP. Can you, as best you can, kind of help us how material that step down in mix will actually be? I mean, are we talking, you know, I think this year, if I'm not mistaken, you're kind of on track to do 280. Does that step down meaningfully next year, or is it a multi-year process, or how should we be thinking about that? And then finally, can you summarize how much unsold gross development value there is in central London, either on the wholly owned business or the JVs, and how you intend to deal with shifting that stock and the risks perhaps that poses around the profit outlook if you do decide to discount more aggressively? Thank you.
Okay, Gregor, thank you for your questions. So I think that if I can just talk through in terms of the ASP in the land bank and just pick up this point that we've touched on in terms of the mix effect, and then Jessica will talk through regarding the regional market and London in terms of margin and what we're expecting through FY18 and FY19. And then Jessica will also cover in terms of units in London. I mean, I'll just say that on units in London, we gave some very specific information in February in terms of units. So I don't think we're going to do anything more than just really restate that position, but we'll provide more color, obviously, in September. In terms of the land bank mix effect, I mean, it is a multi-year effect. We're going to have high-end London coming through FY18 and FY19 through our P&L. Now, there's obviously a range of sites in London. We provided some colour in February. But, you know, we have sites, for example, Landmark Place, where we're selling through at around £1,700 a square foot. There's 165 units to be sold, partly in FY18, partly in FY19. So, I mean, that has a big impact. Average selling prices are clearly very high. We have other sites like Blackfriars Circus in London, where we're coming through at around £1,200 a square foot. It's a delivery partly in 18, largely in 18 and partly in 19. So these will wash through 18 and 19. In terms of the regional bespoke developments, so for example, we have got the Botanics in Glasgow. Average selling price at the Botanics in Glasgow will be round about £600,000. We've got the Chocolate Works in York, average selling price round about £500,000. These will run through FY18 and FY19, but should be predominantly gone by 19. So what we would expect is that we see rising volumes and we see rising margin, and therefore the overall profit delivery as we move through 18, 19 and 20 will clearly increase. But the ASP will be quite muted. I'm not necessarily saying the ASP will be falling, but the ASP will be quite muted in terms of any impact, obviously barring any general inflation in the market.
Okay, so morning, Gregor. So I pick up first in terms of the London units and then come back in terms of regional and London margin. So at the half year, we said we had 395 units left in our wholly owned business in terms of zones 1 and 2 central London. And as at the end of March, we had 349 units left, so we had clearly taken completions during the 3-month period, as we would expect. And we continue to expect that we will sell through those units over the next 2 years, so that by the end of FY19, we would expect that all of our wholly owned zones 1 and 2 units will have gone, and we will just be left trading through in terms of the joint venture line in zones 1 and 2. Looking at the margin. Pardon? In terms of the city. Yes, so we would expect that we'll continue to trade through for the next few years after that in terms of the zones 1 and 2 joint ventures. But clearly we'll continue to give specific guidance in terms of the joint venture profit line at the appropriate point in time.
In terms
of margin, very much the same picture as we set out when we gave our half-year results. As we said, London is more second-half weighted just because of the build programs rather than anything else. Clearly, we did 162 completions in the first half of the year, and we continue to expect to do 800 completions in terms of the whole, in terms of the full year. That portion of completions, as I said at the half year, had a 40 basis points drag in terms of margin. And we continue to expect that that will have an effect on this year. However, we're very much seeing the improvements in terms of performance from the regional business, as David outlined, and therefore we continue to expect that those two will be in line. Looking forward, what I would say is we're very much focused in terms of our strategy. Margin delivery, you can see in the statement what is coming through from the new product range, and clearly we'll continue to update the market at the appropriate time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
We will now take our next question from Chris Millington from Numis. Please go ahead.
Morning, David. Morning, Jessica. Just two, if I may, please. I was just hoping for just kind of a general comment on the land market, you know, whether or not you're seeing any inflation in pockets. It certainly sounds like the land buying's going quite well there, so just a comment on that. And the second one's just really about the kind of politics surrounding the house building sector in general. I think we're due to get the LSE report quite soon. We've got the Letwin review going on, and also obviously there's talk around the Help to Buy extension, so just any sort of thoughts on that subject as well.
Okay, Chris, if I just cover both of those, thanks, and good morning. So I think the land market overall, I would say that the regional market is very, very positive. There is a lot of land available. When you look at the planning approval numbers and see that there are planning approval numbers coming through at a sort of 375,000 approvals last year, we have an environment where the planning policy framework is definitely bringing more land through the system. Whether it be house builders or land promoters, have been going into the market both on operational land but particularly on strategic land in a biggish way since the planning policy framework took shape in 2012, and therefore that land is now coming through the planning system, and we see that there are just fantastic opportunities in the regional marketplace. That has given a backdrop for us where we have been able to increase our hurdle rates. We stick with our published hurdle rates at 20% gross margin, 25% return on capital, but we've consistently said that we are buying above those hurdle rates. And therefore, you know, I think we're being selective. We're buying in some smaller sites. We're buying in some larger sites, and we're seeing great opportunities. When you look at London, we're not bidding in Zone 1 or the inner edge of Zone 2. We are bidding actively in Zone 3 to 6. And I think we find that our best positioning in that market is to go for larger regeneration schemes, which, you know, I think is really that we're bad at over the last 30 years in London, has been at its strongest. So we bought the Nestle factory from Seagull, Nestle factory out at Hayes. That will be around 1,200 units coming through. For example, we bought a site at Harrow with Hyde Housing, which is around 1,500 units coming through. So we see them as being really good opportunities. But I think that the smaller sites in London, in zone, say, 3 to 6, very, very competitive. There is still a lot of interest in the smaller sites, and therefore more difficult for us to buy and achieve hurdle rates. But overall, very positive. We will approve around or slightly more than 20,000 plots this year. And as Jessica said, you know, I would expect something similar next year, subject to the opportunities that are available. In terms of the sort of political landscape, I mean, I think, first of all, you've just got to step back from it and say that for house builders, it is a hugely positive backdrop. I think for any industry to have the Prime Minister saying that, you know, her number one domestic priority is your industry, that is a hugely positive backdrop. So building more houses is something that the country is very, very focused on. And we don't see any sign that the government are going to deviate from that. They've said very publicly that they want 300,000 homes built by the middle of the next decade. We're coming off, in England, 217,000 is the official number for last year. So, you know, that is a good platform for the industry to move to 300,000 over the next 7 or 8 years. So I think that's hugely positive. Helped by and the LSE review, you know, all tied into one. The LSE did the original review in 15, which resulted in the scheme being extended to 21. We can see nothing in the political backdrop that would be a driver for the government not to extend the scheme. Clearly, they will have to make the decision, but creating a cliff edge in 2021 in the run-up to the next election just looks improbable. And we think it's likely that the Letwin Review, you've seen the initial report from the Letwin Review. I don't think there was anything sort of surprising within the initial report. I think it's likely that the Letwin Review will be published prior to the government making any further statements regarding Help to Buy, and therefore likely that if there are statements on Help to Buy this year, that they will be in the autumn.
Got you. Very clear. Thanks, David.
Okay. Thanks.
We will now take our next question from Clyde Lewis from Peel Hunt. Please go ahead.
Morning, David. Morning, Jessica. Two, if I may. One, just in terms of those new sites that you've opened, can you just sort of, I suppose, give us a feeling for how those new sites are sort of going in terms of sort of new interest levels and reservations relative to, you know, the new sites you opened, I suppose, in the first half of this financial year and maybe the same time last year, just to sort of put it in context as to whether it's generating more interest from new sites or less, I suppose. Second one I had was on build costs. Maybe just sort of update us a little bit as to sort of what sort of bids you're getting back from the subbies in terms of sort of work that's coming down the pipe in terms of the next 6 to 12 months. And also on mortgage valuations, I mean, there's obviously been one or two sort of weaker numbers in terms of sort of house price inflation. I mean, it is very patchy, but, and you've talked to, obviously about regional being better, but have you seen any pushback in terms of sort of mortgage valuations from the surveyors at all?
Okay, Clyde, hi, good morning. So I'll cover new sites and mortgage valuations, and then Jessica will pick up in terms of build costs and inflation. I mean, on new sites, I would say there's no difference year on year. So we're running at the same rate of sale year on year. And I would say typically on new sites, we will tend to see a higher rate of sale across the first 12 weeks of the site. So you're always likely to get some pent-up demand, and I think that is very consistent. Whether we're releasing from the sales arena or on occasion we're releasing from an existing sales arena close by or even releasing from a local hotel, there's a variety of strategies that we would employ. But generally, I think we're seeing good demand at the point of launch, and that would give higher than normal sales rates and no real change year on year. In terms of mortgage valuations, I mean, it's a very, very important indicator for our business. It's very important in terms of, you know, a sort of internal KPI. So we track valuations and clearly in particular down valuations. Each division will track that site by site. I would say that there is minimal levels of down valuations. I mean, you will always find that a valuer takes the view that in certain markets prices have been pushed too far, typically relative to the second-hand comparables. But I think if you look at it across the piece, year on year, we're not seeing any change in terms of the trends on valuations. But it's very important that we monitor it, partly because is there any change in banks lending? No, banks are very, very keen to lend. And secondly, to what extent are prices being pushed in the local market? I mean, it's clearly very important that the local management are aware of prices and are getting prices in the right position on a development-by-development basis.
Okay, in terms of build cost slide, we continue to expect build cost inflation to be 3 to 4% this year and the same looking forward to next year. We have seen some pressure and some material costs. So in particular, I would highlight timber, where we have seen an inflation in timber all timber components. With regards to subcontractors, I think the inflation is very geographic specific and very related to specific trades. So we have seen some inflation in terms of bricklaying rates, and in particular areas such as Newcastle, where there is less inflow of trades into that area. We have seen high bricklaying rates come through. But overall, we expect to stick with the 3 to 4% this year and next year.
Okay. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Charlie Campbell from Liberum. Please go ahead.
Good morning, all. A lot of questions obviously already addressed, but a couple more from me. Just on the cash guidance, so you're guiding up on cash, and yet sort of land spend is probably as expected, land creditor as expected. So just wonder what the moving bit is there, and if that if that's perhaps some of the legacy working capital, that'd be good to hear about. And then you said in the commentary or in answer to a question that you still thought that you could get to 20,000 units at some point. Clearly, kind of the last time that was achieved was you had the benefit of, I suppose, quite a lot of high-rise stuff in secondary cities. Is that something you'll go back to, or you'd still see 20,000 without having to go back to that kind of product?
Okay, Charlie, good morning. If I cover the completion volume outlook, and Jessica will talk through in terms of the cash guidance. So I think if you look at 20,000 completions, but go back to 2007, the business reported around 18,500 completions, but we acquired David Wilson during the year. And the reality is that pro forma for the calendar year, we were probably at around about 21,000 completions. As you say, there was a much higher proportion of flats in the mix, so probably around 50%, close to 50% flats, whereas now we're at around 20% flats. So but this is a very, very important point, a point that we keep emphasising to government, is that you need a lot more bricklayers and roof tilers, etc., to build houses. And nationally, we're building a lot more houses than we were in 2007. When you look at our plans in terms of growth, I mean, first of all, we're moving from a base of around 17,500 to around 20. We've said that, you know, it's in the medium term. It will take 3 or 4 years. When you look at the central planks of that growth, I mean, first of all, we believe that our divisions, you know, roughly can be doing 725, 750 completions each, firstly. And therefore, we have capacity within our existing divisions. Secondly, we have opened a new division in Cambridgeshire, and that will grow over the next 3 or 4 years to full capacity. So in terms of moving that 2,500 completions on a step-by-step basis over the next 3 or 4 years, we see that as being very achievable. We don't see a big change in product, so it's not, we're not going to be moving a long way away from 20% flats. And clearly, the majority of our production in London is flatted schemes. Outside of London, we may see some more flats come into the mix, not in a major way, but if we do so, then they will tend to be 3 or 4 storey sitting on existing developments rather than standalone developments of apartments.
Picking up on cash then, Charlie, we're very much sticking in terms of our land spend guidance, so we continue to expect that the land spend will be higher this year at around 1.1 billion, and that land creditors will be within 30 to 35% of the owned land bank at the end of the year. So the increase in cash guidance of 50 million is purely driven by changes in other areas of working capital. Clearly, we're approaching the end of our financial year now, and we've got more certainty as to what the working capital flows will be, and therefore we consider it the appropriate time to increase the guidance.
And so just to follow up, would that extra 50 million come from sort of bits of the working capital that are, I suppose, at the more legacy end and the less productive end, or just this is just a general move?
It's just a general move. I couldn't point to a specific development or a specific class of asset. It's just a general move across the board in terms of working capital.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Kevin Pemmick from King Coles. Please go ahead.
Good morning to you both. Two from me, please, if I can. First one just relates to the JV London activity. Could you, I guess it may not be a simple answer, but across the JVs, can you comment on who actually, you know, what control you have over pricing strategy with the partner? I mean, do you hold the aces, or is it feasible that one of the partners can actually, you know, has something in the agreement which, you know, ties you to a certain number of completions or volume per year, and they can adjust price accordingly? Just trying to gauge, you know, the extent to which the partner's attitude on life might differ from yours in terms of the workout of the JVs. And secondly, I guess much more easily, the sites that you currently have under production with the new ranges, you know, I suspect none of those have actually, you know, come to completion yet, as it were. But on those sites under construction and the ones nearest to physical build completion, could you just confirm whether they have actually achieved the desired reduction in build costs that you know, that you've targeted and mentioned?
Okay, Kevin. Hi. Good morning. I'll cover both of those. I mean, if I just start with the new ranges, the short answer is yes. I mean, bear in mind that if you just take Barratt and the new house type range in Barratt, where the changes were most significant, I think probably three of the main changes were dropping the roof pitch, taking out most of the light boxes, and removing most of the bay windows. Now, the reality is that, you know, those are clearly very tangible changes. We're not buying the light boxes, we're not creating the bay windows, and we're not having such high roof pitches. So the build cost savings are very real and absolutely are crystallising. What I think that the slightly tighter layout is also allowing us to do is to get better coverage, and we have definitely seen an improvement in the coverage ratios. So, yeah, we're very happy that we're buying
density.
Correct. So we're buying the land at higher margins, and we are delivering it at higher margins. We're very comfortable with that position. In terms of joint venture activity, I mean, just to talk through it, because I did obviously come up on a couple of questions. So the joint ventures are structured as 50-50, I think what would be typically called 50-50 deadlock joint ventures. So no partner has overall control. And, you know, I think it's important for a whole series of reasons that is the case. There is an essence in London of scale four joint ventures. So when you look at our joint venture partners, we have one joint venture with British Land at Aldgate. Phase one is build and sales complete. Phase two, certain groundworks have been done, but the main build has not commenced. We then have Enderby Wharf, where we are in joint venture with Morgan Stanley. We're going through that joint venture at some rate. Selling prices are materially lower than the other three joint ventures. Again, it's a deadlock, but, you know, we would like to describe ourselves as being the sort of specialist partner, because we are both building and selling on behalf of the joint venture. So we have to agree a selling strategy with our joint venture partners, but we are providing the strategy and asking our joint venture partner to agree it. And I would say, as a generalization, there's not a lot of disagreement, because ultimately prices are quite visible in the market. The other two joint ventures, Fulham and Nine Elms, are both with London and Quadrant. Fulham, we're building sales complete on phase one. We have done the foundation work on phase two, and we're ready to commence in terms of build on phase two. And then Nine Elms, we are building out Nine Elms. We're on the final tower with 232 units coming out of the final tower, and that will be build complete by late 19. So that's kind of it in terms of our joint venture business in London. Now, I don't want to say it's all straightforward, because I think we recognise that at higher price points, there are challenges. And therefore, we're focused on a strategy of build, manage the sales, and if we can sell privately at the right rate of sale, for example, Enderby, then there's no consideration given to any other strategy. We just build and sell. Where we have any concerns about the rate of sale on a private basis, then we will look at whether bulk deals are appropriate. We have done bulk deals at Nine Elms, and historically also at Fulham and Aldgate, but presently there are no bulk deals planned.
Okay, thank you very much.
No problem.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. We will now take our next question from Alistair Stewart from Stock Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jessica and David. Most of my questions have been at least partly answered. You talked about labour availability and pricing with Clyde. But have there been any changes in any of the materials in terms of pricing and availability, lead times, and so on since February? That's my first question. Second question is, I'm not aware of you having much in Manchester, in central Manchester, but, you know, I'm hearing more and more that there's the big build pipeline in central Manchester is putting pressure on labour rates and availability. So have you experienced any of that, even ripple effects in that? And finally, you mentioned a survey on the industry improving its service for the first time. Now, where can I pick up a copy of that?
Okay. Good morning, Alistair. Let me just try and just pick my way through those. So if I do the easy one first, so the survey I referred to, Alistair, which you know, the HBF survey, so that is the annual survey of results. That was published in March, and that showed that the industry had moved up from a customer recommend of 84% to a customer recommend of 86%. We will happily send you a copy because we are at the top of that table. So, that survey. So that will be on the HBF website. Interesting point you make in terms of Manchester and Birmingham. I mean, we, as you say, are not in central Manchester in any shape. So we're not building flatted schemes in Manchester.
I didn't think any sort of ripple effects I meant.
I wouldn't say that we wouldn't describe it as a hot spot. I mean, Jessica referred to Newcastle. Again, we're not building flatted schemes in Newcastle. We've got some fairly central housing schemes in Newcastle. I think Newcastle is a reasonable hotspot. You know, there is definitely a squeeze on labour. But no ripple effect in terms of Manchester. I wouldn't describe it as such. In terms of materials, the supply chain, we have to put it in the context that we've gone from 115,000 completions in 2011 up to 215,000 completions in 2017. And as you know, the supply chain went all the way down from 200,000 and all the way back up to 200,000 10 years later. So I think there has been a fair pressure on the supply chain. And yeah, I think it's well documented if you look over the last 3 or 4 years that the industry's had challenges with bricks and blocks. Lead times have gone out very, very substantially. You know, we've gone out from probably at an extreme lead times on bricks back in 2009 being 2 weeks to lead times on bricks now being at 20 weeks or 22 weeks. But the reality is once the lead times have settled, it doesn't present any problem. The site manager knows he needs to order the bricks. He orders the bricks and the bricks arrive. I think there's been a few specific challenges around, for example, internal doors. That's always a good conversation to have with the Secretary of State. Why can't we build faster? Because we can't get any internal doors. So that has been a particular challenge for the industry. I would think all house builders have faced major issues with internal doors over the last 6 to 9 months. Interestingly enough, not resulting in any pricing pressures, simply about availability. So one of our lowest cost components is causing one of our biggest challenges in terms of both lead times and actually availability. But generally, I would say bricks and blocks, timber, kitchens, the key supplies, I would say that the supply chain have been dealing very well with the increase in volume.
All right, thanks very much.
Not at all. Thanks, Alistair.
There appears to be no further questions, so I'd like to turn the call back to yourself for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you. So just to say to everyone, thank you very much for dialing in. As we've said, we feel that we're in good shape, and we will clearly be back with our trading update in July. Thank you.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.